States, that's an over-the-year program. So uniqueness is a quality at WEF that we really value, and we hope that you do as well. Again, that website is weft.org. And now stay tuned for today's episode of Disability Beat. This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with Champaign County Clerk Aaron Ammons with some important information about election accessibility for voters with disabilities. But first, disability news for the week of April 5th, 2021. By the way, if you or a family member with a disability has not yet received a vaccine, have a paper and pen ready at the end of the news today. Along with funding for roads and bridges, President Joe Biden's $2 trillion infrastructure plan includes a big investment in home and community-based services for people with disabilities. The proposal, known as the American Jobs Plan, calls for $400 billion. In spending to expand access to Medicaid, home, and community-based services for those currently on waiting lists. The push to enhance offerings for people with disabilities is part of a comprehensive proposal to modernize America's infrastructure and put more people to work. In addition to building projects focused on transportation, schools, and federal facilities, Biden says the nation must also invest in the caregiving system in this country. Biden said spending would occur largely over 8 years, paid for through corporate tax increases. The American Jobs Plan will work together with another proposal called the American Families Plan to boost the caregiving workforce and the people they serve. That proposal is yet to be released. The White House pointed to research suggesting that increasing pay for direct care staff leads to better quality care, greater productivity, fewer health violations, and helps prevent death. The focus on caregivers and improving access to home and community-based services makes good on promises Biden made during his campaign for the White House last year. And the plan's rollout comes just weeks after a group of federal lawmakers issued a draft proposal for a bill known as the HCBS Access Act, designed to eliminate waiting lists, strengthening the network of providers, among other improvements. Beyond services for people with disabilities, Biden's American Jobs Plan would also expand access to competitive integrated employment for people with disabilities and bar employers from paying people with disabilities what's known as sub-minimum wage, pay that's less than the federal minimum. The IRS and the U.S. Department of Treasury said last week that they expect to start issuing the $1,400 economic stimulus payments to beneficiaries who receive Social Security and Supplemental Security Income benefits, and those will be released soon. Most will be sent electronically and be received on April 7th, according to the agencies. Social Security officials were pressured to act after a group of legislators said that the IRS had requested the files 2 weeks before the American Rescue Plan was signed into law on March 11th, greenlighting the payments. Even so, lawmakers said that the Social Security Administration was still dragging its feet more than a week after the IRS started issuing payments. The lawmakers said the delays left nearly 30 million Social Security and SSI beneficiaries waiting and, quote, defied congressional intent and imposed needless anxiety and pain on taxpayers, end quote. Even though the IRS has already sent 127 million stimulus checks, the agency was waiting on the Social Security Administration to proceed with payments to beneficiaries who have not recently filed tax returns or used the agency's non-filers tool. Federal beneficiaries could check on the status of their payments on the IRS website starting this past weekend, the agency said. Individuals who earn less than $75,000 annually qualify for the $1,400 payments, with phased amounts for those making up to $80,000. The payments are automatic in most cases and generally will be paid to beneficiaries the same way they receive their regular benefits, the IRS said. Unlike previous rounds of economic stimulus payments during the pandemic, this time adults with disabilities who are considered dependents for tax purposes are eligible. The payments go to the taxpayer who claims the dependent. Stimulus payments will not be considered income for SSI recipients, the Social Security Administration said, and the funds will be excluded from resources for 12 months. And finally, a COVID vaccine clinic in Pennsylvania has made some accommodations specifically for people with disabilities. A special clinic sponsored by the Eagles Autism Foundation and Divine Providence Village, a residential facility in Pennsylvania for people with intellectual disabilities, catered to the autism community, which has faced some challenges in getting vaccinated. Some families worry that their children with autism won't be able to wait in long lines at walk-up clinics or may have challenging behavior while getting vaccinated, said Ryan Hammond, executive director of the Eagles Autism Foundation. One family told Hammond their daughter had been outside so infrequently during the pandemic they didn't know what taking her out in public over the weekend would look like. Families have also been struggling to access doses. Pennsylvania has not included autism on its list of conditions to be prioritized for vaccination. Philadelphia, which is distributing doses independently, recently added people with intellectual disability to its priority list, a group that includes some people with autism. But caregivers weren't included, though they had been elsewhere in the state. The clinic was for eligible people with autism who had to be 18 or older and family members, Hammond said. Just over 1,000 people registered for the doses. Hammond said, "This population needs support. We need to meet them where they are," end quote. To that end, the foundation tried to create a sensory-friendly experience, repurposing luxury boxes as quiet spaces with fidget toys, weighted blankets, and light projections on the ceiling intended to create a calming atmosphere. Families could spend time there if a child became overwhelmed, and in some cases, nurses entered to administer vaccines privately. The by-appointment clinic also allowed families who anticipated their children would have trouble going inside the stadium to receive doses in their cars, Hammond said. And organizers tried to help caregivers prepare for the experience by providing a visual schedule of the day's events, a step-by-step series of photos showing the lobby, the escalator, and other things to share with their children to help alleviate anxiety. Accommodations have not been universally offered across the country, but if you or a family member have yet to receive a vaccine in Champaign County, do not hesitate to contact Julie Pride, administrator for the Champaign County Public Health District, and let her know what accommodations you need. She is willing and able to work with you. And again, if you have that paper and pen, here is her email. It's jpryde@cuphd.org. Again, that's jpryde@cuphd.org. And that's the news for this week. And you are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat. I'm Vicki Nicewander, and I'm joined today on the phone by another really important person in our community, and actually here at WEFT as well, Aaron Ammons, who is the Champaign County Clerk. Welcome to the program, Aaron.
Well, thank you for having me. How are you, Vicki?
I'm doing well. So I was actually rather surprised that you were able to be on the show today, given that we're in the thick of election right now. But I guess maybe this election, you know, kind of midway through the year, is not quite as busy as others.
Well, not as an election, it's not as busy. Of course, the night before election is pretty hectic. We've got quite a bit going on right now. But this is an important conversation overall, and in particular as it relates to voting. So I wanted to make sure I had the time to come on with you this evening.
Okay, well, why don't we talk a little bit, and the topic that you're covering today are some of the accommodations that have been made in the past for people with disabilities who are voting age, and maybe some new things that have come about recently. I know you have been very in tune with the disability community since you became county clerk a couple years ago, right? It's been a couple years, right?
Yes, it has been.
So
we've done, so there was a few things that were in place, and I don't want to be completely upfront and vulnerable and open here, because I've been learning more, and I've been educated in my 2 years here, and it started on campus one night. We were having a conversation about race and class in a big room in the union. And there was a young woman who was in a wheelchair who she just simply raised the question. She said, you know, there's a lot of talk here about very important issues. She said, I'm just wondering if how many of you know how many students who are disabled or differently abled are here on campus and what our accommodations are. And she just raised the question, and I saw in the face of many who were around, and in my own heart and mind, I realized that I didn't know the answer. And it just made me reflect from that point on, and then now since I've become clerk, as I talk about accessibility, I used to think about it only in the terms of what made voting easier for the average voter, right? Mm-hmm. The person who does not have a disability. And now I really think more about, when I think about access, I'm not just thinking about vote by mail. I'm also thinking about ADA accommodations. How does the vote by mail work for people with disabilities? And I still struggle with it to some degree, to try to think about it and through that lens. So I want to be educated by you and people like you so that I can make the appropriate accommodations for people who are differently able.
Mm-hmm.
So I am. I know that when I got here, there were certain things like the polling locations have to be ADA accessible. And I found that that ranged from a actual ramp or various other ways that were accommodations for people who with disabilities. But I also saw that it was sometimes just a makeshift ramp or just, yeah, we can put this cardboard or this plywood here so a person in a wheelchair can kind of go up to the step. You know, it was really an afterthought. And so we're trying to work on actual locations that are not just makeshift ADA accessible, but actually built to accommodate the various different ways in which a person with a disability would need to access the location.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been rambling for a little while. I'll let you come back in now.
What? Thanks, Aaron. I appreciate that. So are there things you referenced vote by mail? And I know that lots of people did take advantage of that this past election, obviously, because of the pandemic. What are some of the struggles that you've seen for people with disabilities with that method of voting?
Yeah. So for vote by mail, I think the request itself online hasn't been as smooth at all as I would want it to be.
Mm.
And the point that I was kind of making earlier is that for me, when I fight for access for people of color who have been disenfranchised or something, then I look for an ally or someone I can build an alliance with who will take that message for me into that space. And I have to admit that me not understanding fully the complications for an individual who is disabled, I didn't see some of the drawbacks or some of the concerns that that person might have when trying to do a vote-by-mail application. So I can see where if a person is who's vision impaired, mm-hmm. then how will they access or how will they work the request for a vote-by-mail online, right?
Mm-hmm.
So these were things that I'm still learning right now. I'm not just calling in to say, hey, these are a couple of things that we've done, but I'm hoping that you may connect me with some people that can come in and show me how they would use the service and show me where the drawback is so that I can close that loophole as we move forward. So one of the things that we saw was that people who were vision impaired, they said, well, it's not working for me, or even it was one other issue that just came up last week. It was a person who they said they were working the process and they got about halfway through it and then they didn't know where to go from there. So just even having the prompts set up correctly and so that the process can be carried out all the way through really requires that I bring in someone who can speak to that, maybe someone who's disabled who works in the tech industry and can help walk me through those things. So that's what I'm looking for right now so that I can close those loopholes for the individuals who are trying to request vote-by-mail ballots.
Right. So is the county clerk's website, is that accessible? Is there
yes.
a screen reader and enlargement and all that kind of thing?
Yes. All that's there. We brought in some professionals to do the website so that we would have from, you know, the color schemes and everything met the requirements from an ADA standpoint. But even that, I almost feel like, Vicki, that's like when I worked on the felony disenfranchisement, there were a lot of different employers who would just kind of do the bare minimum to check the box, but they don't have a passion for it. So that's what I think we're running into here with the website and people with disabilities being able to complete their vote-by-mail request and then other things on the website.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do know a few people who would be really good at helping you through that. So I'll afterwards send you an email with some contact information, maybe introduce you by email to them because they are experts in the field. So that should be helpful. So,
okay, that would be great.
So let's walk through what the accommodations might be. And since you mentioned somebody with vision impairment, when they come to vote, what is the general process that they should expect?
Yeah. So the individual, we just had a gentleman come in who's a vision impaired, a gentleman named Anthony, Friday he came in.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, he came in to vote, and we processed him in the same way. He gives his name. We were able to look him up in the poll books in our voter registration base and get a ballot for him. And so now that we have this new machine, it's called the Express Vote. It replaces the old voter-assisted terminal that I think I brought to the first disability fair at Vineyard. So this new machine is built to accommodate any voter, but in particular it has the features that would accommodate, for instance, someone like Anthony who was vision impaired.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able to sit Anthony down, plug in the headphones, and then the person who's recorded walked him through and talked him through the entire process. And he was able to complete the process basically from beginning to end all by himself. And we spoke afterwards, and he was very relieved and very happy that we had brought in the new machine because the previous machine did not allow him to do everything on his own. And he lost that sense of independence and privacy because he had to have a Democrat and a Republican election judge to sit with him, read the names to him while they filled out his ballot for him. And so he was able to complete his entire ballot on his own, independent of any other assistance. And he felt that sense of dignity and independence that we had not been able to provide for him previously.
So when you had the old machine, than when somebody actually cast their ballot, you know, selected somebody to vote? Do they just tell the judges who they were voting for, and then they...
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what they had to do, and that was contrary to the experience that the other voters were having, which was to have a sense of privacy and not have everyone know who you were voting for. So that was extremely important to him and extremely important to me as I'm learning more about accessibility and dealing with our population of individuals who are differently abled. And I wanted to make sure that they had that experience. So it was very exciting for me. And I think I was as excited as he was almost to be able to have that experience without the need for other election judges to sit there and walk him through the process.
Now, do you reserve that equipment just for people who are visually impaired, or is it open to anybody who comes in who says, I want to try it?
Yeah. No, it's open to anyone. But certainly we have an understanding with the judges that if there's someone who is disabled who comes in, then they have the, we want to give them access to that machine, mm-hmm. if it's available. And usually, I mean, it only takes, you know, two or three minutes for someone to use the machine, and then they're off doing their tabulation and moving on. So it's not a long wait. It wouldn't be a long wait for anyone who wanted to use the machine if someone was using it. Right now we have one at every location that will be open because that's the law. I have to have at least one. Mm-hmm. Our goal is to have five or six of them, if not more, at every polling location so that we'll have plenty for an individual who may be disabled and want to use and need to use the machine. And then we also have extras for individuals who just want to expedite the process and not have such a long experience there in the voting booth.
Right. I think, another type of disability that could be served well by that is somebody who may have their sight but is a non-reader. Mm-hmm. So to be able to listen to who the different candidates are, and they probably are very well aware of the issues maybe, but not so much able to actually read the text on the page.
Yeah, I think I do remember coming to the first fair and learning that just because a person is vision impaired doesn't mean that they read Braille.
Mm. You know, I read a story in the news just a couple weeks ago that said only about 10% of people who are blind read Braille. They just don't teach it anymore. So, yeah, it's the screen readers and the type of technology that you're looking at that are really what's going to be helpful for folks, I think.
Yeah, we do have the contrast screen. Anthony spoke about that, where you can change the background so that the letters are brighter and they sort of jump off the screen better than they would if they had a sort of blue background like you would typically see from a computer.
Yeah. Are there any other accommodations that people need to be aware of that are available if people need them?
Let me see if there's anything in particular. First, I mean, certainly any voter, but in particular someone who may be struggling with either accessing the facility or anything like that, we have wheelchairs here available at the Brookings. There was a couple of times individuals had a longer walk than they thought it would be to get to the polling location. Mm. And by the time they got there, they were a little worn out and needed to sit down. And then we were able to accommodate them by getting them back to their vehicle in the chair, so they didn't have to walk as far as they did to get to the polling location. We try to do anything that we possibly can, and I don't know if there's anything else in particular other than reaching out to the election judge and letting them know what the concern is or what the disability is and that what they would need help with, because we would certainly do everything we needed to do to accommodate them within the law.
And I know people appreciate that for sure. I know that you do. If somebody comes in and says, I want, you know, my mom or dad or my friend to help me fill out the ballot, that's a possibility, right?
Yeah, absolutely. A loved one can come in with them. So even in the situation where we had the Democrat and the Republican election judge, if you had someone come in who was a guardian or even... just your spouse, if they came in with you and you needed assistance with them, they could sit with you and help you as well.
Okay, very good. So in my news today, I talked about a group that did some accommodations for people with autism who might have behavior issues, and you know, that is the, have you ever experienced anything like that yet?
You know, I don't think we've experienced it. I haven't. I'm sure one of the other judges have probably experienced this. I'm going to have to reach out to them and ask them for their story,
mm-hmm.
so that we can dig a little bit deeper into this. But I do know we've had some people come, you know, when they came to vote and they had someone with them who may have been autistic and sort of needed something to do mm-hmm. while they were voting or something like that. And so we've tried to accommodate them with, you know, we've got a couple tables that we had set up in the gym where we could have one of the election judges or one of the staff sit with the young person who was autistic and sort of be there with them and work with them while the person went to go vote. So we've tried to do little things like that, but I can see that that's, you know, that's really taxing on everyone, because now the person with autism is basically here with a stranger that they don't really know that well. And the, you know, the person who's coming to vote is still thinking about my child or my loved one who's, you know, typically with me, and now I'm trying to vote. So it's not something that is an ideal situation for us. And we really need some, I think we need you to come in the office and work with us and walk through this process with us and bring some people who are disabled into the process more so that they can offer some input for us. And so give us some guidance.
You know, I think the important thing for people to know is that if they have a particular concern, you know, that say they have an adult child with autism who might suffer from anxiety, they could contact you in advance and say, my kid wants to vote, but here's the issue for him or her, that you would be willing to work with them to make that happen.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We have lots of different things, from curbside voting that could be an option for them, if, instead of having to get out and come inside. If they were to work with the child or the loved one while they're doing in the curbside voting, certainly vote by mail mm-hmm. is an option for anyone who's a registered voter. And that way you can get your ballot delivered, you know, mailed to you. And if the one of the things that I would need some guidance on and maybe would be helpful is if a person in today's society, with technology being so vast and everywhere in the society, how does the average person who is disabled, either whether it's vision impaired or maybe they don't have the functions of their hands, how do they function in other circumstances? Mm-hmm. What do they do when they want to go on Facebook? Or are people with such disabilities just not on social media platforms? But the more I learn about how they navigate other spaces, then the more I can see how I might be able to implement something here in the clerk's office.
And so if folks want to learn more, county clerk's website is what?
ChampaignCountyClerk.com. ChampaignCountyClerk.com. Our phone number is 384-3720. And you can also try 384-3724. Either one will get you where you need to go to speak to someone in the elections division or to speak to me, and we can talk a little bit more about how we could create accommodations or make accommodations for an individual who is differently abled.
And people can register tomorrow if they aren't registered yet, right?
That's right. It's never too late in Illinois to register.
Okay,
awesome. There are deadlines for certain ways to register, but currently what we're in right now, Vicki, is called our grace period, where an individual who has a photo ID and a piece of mail with their current address on it, they can still come in and register physically at the location here at one of the universal locations. They can register and vote during the same trip.
Thanks so much for joining me today, Aaron Ammons, County Clerk of Champaign County. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Vicki. Talk to you soon.
This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and have a great rest of your week. No, I'm staying.